Jeff, when you look at the situation in Philippines, we know that Putin had recently a meeting with security members, and he was talking about Philippines and the concerns that are growing in Philippines. And the same thing is happening in China. How do you see the situation of Philippines vis-a-vis the conflict between Russia and China on one side and NATO on the other side?
Well, we need to understand that South Korea, Japan, and the Philippines are completely prostrate vassals to the United States and by extension, NATO. We cannot forget that it's not just the United States that's doing drive-bys and ships, in the South China Sea. And doing flyovers, close to Chinese territory in the South China Sea. Holland is there, France is there, Britain is there, Italy's there. Everybody in NATO and their dead dog is there, to hassle and to upset upset China. But anyway, the Philippines, it's a law, it's a law. I wrote a couple of great articles about the Philippines. It was a horribly persecuted Spanish colony for 300 years, the 1600s, the 1700s, and the 1800s. The word concentration camp came from the Spanish in the Philippines, who created concentration camps because the Filipinos, just like the Vietnamese, are tough people. They don't like people in their territory. They don't like people invading them, and so the Filipinos would rise up against the Spanish, and that's where the idea of concentration camps came from. It was the Spanish that invented them to imprison and ultimately kill the Filipinos in concentration camp. So they had 300 years of awful colonialism, imperialism, and colonialism. Then the Spanish-American War, which the U.S. started. It was with a false flag in Cuba with the USS Maine. President McKinley had an erection to be a global empire, so they had to have a war. So they picked Spain to fight, and so they were in the Philippines and during the Spanish-American War. And the unfortunately the Filipinos believed that great imperial promise: if you help us, we'll give you your independence when we win. So the Filipinos helped the Americans defeat the Spanish, and of course the Americans turned right back around and didn't leave, and said and turned the Philippines into a colony. So note picked it right back up. Horrible, horrible war lasted for 3 years. The United States killed an estimated 1 million. These are the kind of statistics, Nima, that Westerners just don't know about, and they need to understand what the West is like. The United States exterminated 1 million Filipinos, one fourth of the people in the Philippines, to pacify the Filipino population. They burned villages, flooded, blew up dams, flooded fields, burned fields, massacred thousands and thousands of people. This is what the Filipinos have been living with for the last 400 years. And so the United States finally tames them. They in 1901, they were a colony from 1901 to 1935. Roosevelt gave them nominal independence in 1935. And ever since 1935, they have been a prostrate American vassal. And every president from 1935 up until 2016 was a loyal American puppet. And the and with the military from 1901 all the way up to today, the military in the Philippines is totally American. I mean, it's an extension of the American army. I mean, the American army owns the Filipino army lock, stock, and barrel. Then Duterte gets in office 2016 to 2022. He's the only president the Filipinos have ever had in its entire history who actually were able to face down the U.S. military and the Filipino military and help the people. He was the only president that has actually helped the people. And so now we have Ferdinand Marcos's son, who is the president after Duterte. Of course, Ferdinand Marcos from 1965 to 1981 was one of the most corrupt, vile, evil, fascist dictator. I mean, just fascist dictators in the history of the world, and a complete and total sellout to the United States. And so Bongbong, his son is called Bongbong, and he is apparently a drug addict. There, apparently he's a cocaine addict, like Zelensky in Ukraine. So he is, a lot of people in the Philippines say he has a cocaine habit. And of course, empire loves people with these kind of weaknesses because, of course, they can make them do what they want. So initially, after getting in office, after he made some nice things said about China, but after that, you know, 6 years when Rodrigo Duterte tamed the military and actually helped the people, it didn't take long for them to get back in power. And so Bongbong is like, you know, any other. A puppet. He has no control over his government. It's being completely taken over by the elites, the ten legacy Castilian Spanish families that stayed there after the Spanish American War. They're the ones that run the country and own the country. So it's just he's pathetic. He's a billionaire. He has no connection with the people. He's awful. He got out of the Belt and Road Initiative and stopped or slowed down all the Chinese projects and all the bridges and the high speed trains and the ports and the airports and all that. Just because they were Chinese, he stopped them. And then I even printed out a map here. He agreed to let the United States put four more use four more bases that are in the Philippines. And what do you know, Nima? Three of the four are right on the north tip of Luzon Island in the north of the Philippines, which is pointed to Taiwan. What a coincidence. And so now the Americans are going to occupy, you know, they're going to occupy more Filipino military bases that are just, you know, very, very close to Taiwan. The Philippines, it's very frustrating. You know, my wife and I have worked with the Filipino people. They're, you know, we taught internationally for 10 years over in China. We had a number of Filipino, you know, friends and colleagues, and they're just terrific people. We've been there, we've traveled there. In fact, we were there in 2016 when Duterte got elected. We were there. And so they're just terrific people, and yet they have been abused for almost 400 years. And I feel terrible for them. And now the Americans will just be shipping, they'll just be stockpiling arms in these bases for the coming war with China. I mean, that's what it's all about. They will use these bases to stockpile for the eventual Ukrainianization of Taiwan, which is coming down the pike. Nima, that's where we're at.
Yeah, many people are talking about turning Philippines into Ukraine, a new Ukraine in that region. Do you see that could happen with the current phase of the conflict between these superpowers, or Philippines is not that stupid to get involved in
well,
such a conflict?
Well, listen, Bongbong Marcos, Ferdinand Marcos Jr., he's not stupid. No, these people are not stupid. They're bought and paid for. They're just prostitutes. They're self-interested, multi-billionaire, thieves. They're just crooks. But they're smart people. It's the poor Filipinos, on those 7,000 islands, scattered across those 7,000 islands. They're the ones that are, who are suffering. When you go there, it's a poor country. I mean, it is a poor country. And Duterte gave away something like, he turned over something like 225,000 hectares of land to peasants, to landless people, but he's the only one that's done it in 100 years. And I don't know. Communism is not a threat in the Philippines. If you want to look at communism as a threat, Duterte was anti-communist. They have tried to create. They have tried to. Sort of come down from the mountains, there are apparently, some communist cells, that are hanging out up in the mountains, but I don't even know how they could turn it into a Ukraine where, but, because there's no real domestic conflict, in the Philippines. The Philippines is much, much more useful for Western Empire as a second aircraft carrier, an immovable aircraft. It was U.S. General Douglas MacArthur 70 years ago who called Japan the United States's, I'm sorry, Taiwan, who called Taiwan the United States's unsinkable aircraft carrier to fight the Chinese. So and then of course they also said that about Japan. So I think Japan and the Philippines are more arms depots. They're more to store arms and stock arms, missiles and weapons and etc. So that when the United States does trigger a conflict with China, they'll have a stock of weapons that they can use, because the supply chain from the West Coast of the United States to the Philippines and Japan and Taiwan is 11,000 kilometers. So I don't see any kind of Ukrainianization, where there's going to be some kind of civil war in the Philippines, but it is definitely now the United States is establishing in that first ring of islands off the coast of China, Japan, Taiwan, and the Philippines. I mean, those are the three aircraft carriers that the United States is solidifying for the coming war with China. And of course, but the Ukraine, Nima, will be Taiwan. They'll use the Taiwan mainland China dialectic to trigger a Ukraine in Taiwan.
But how about Ukraine? How about Taiwanese? Do you think that they would be that stupid to play a game that they've been witnessing what's going on in Ukraine? They have no access to any piece of land. They are just an island.
I just went to Taiwan with Evelyn, and we're going to retire there. We're going to be moving there in September. And it's a lovely place. The people are lovely. It's another province of China. It's uh, the, the uh, in fact it for me, I call it Taiwan Province. The people there are just as liable to Western propaganda as Europeans and Americans are, and Canadians and Australians and New Zealanders and South Koreans and Filipinos, and they're all dealing with the big lie propaganda machine, which is what I call the West mainstream media. I call it the big lie propaganda machine, and it's extremely effective. And the people in the West are brainwashed, and the people in South Korea and the Philippines and Japan and Taiwan are brainwashed. You have to understand, you know, since 2016, the Taiwanese Separatist Party, the DPP, have been, you know, mostly in power, and they have rewritten the textbooks. They have completely rewritten the textbooks to expunge China from Taiwan's history. They have rewritten the textbooks to, I'm serious, the textbooks for the China, for the Taiwanese children have been rewritten to justify the Japanese colonization of Taiwan from 1895 to 1945. It's no longer a colonial occupation, but a, what do they call it? It's just a white war. It's just a whitewash of the fact that the Japanese were also brutal imperial colonial masters. That's all being white, you know, washed, you know, smoothed out, you know, that to justify that Taiwan is not a part of mainland China, even though even though since 1684, Taiwan was an administrative prefecture of Fujian province since 1684. So it's just like, it's been a long time, and it goes back thousands of years before that. When the Dutch got to Taiwan in the 1600s, when they colonized Taiwan, there were already tens of thousands of Chinese there. And then in 1684, when they made it into an administrative unit of mainland China, there were well over 100,000 Chinese there, and so it's China. But you've got this, the DPP, the Democratic Progressive Party, that is doing everything it can to expunge mainland China from the consciousness of the people. When we were there, I kept noticing, I was going, oh, well, there's a few license plates that have in Chinese that have Taiwan province, you know, kind of like in the United States or maybe in Brazil, you've got the state, you know, you've got the license number, but you have the state, you know, the name for the state. Well, like in the United States, Oklahoma license plate, Texas license plate, France, you've got the number of the department. And I kept noticing that, well, there were a few that had Taiwan province on them, but most of them were just nothing. They were apolitical. Well, what they've done is, in order to get rid of the idea that Taiwan is a province of China, and they've expunged that from the license plates to distance Taiwan from the mainland. And now the DPP is doing something I think extremely dangerous. They are now trying to get rid of Chiang Kai-shek, because he was the leader of the KMT who came after they lost against Mao Zedong and basically the Chinese people didn't want him. They kicked him out. The United States, the Navy, you know, moved a million KMT soldiers to Taiwan, and so he was not a good leader. He was not a nice leader. He was a brutal fascist dictator. But Taiwan developed, you know, dramatically under him, and I think they're making a huge mistake trying to get rid of him, just like just like the former Soviet states, like the Baltic states, are taking down statues of Lenin and Stalin and Marx and all that. I think that is extremely dangerous for any country to try to just expunge important people in their past. I think when you decouple yourself from your real history, it comes back to haunt you later. They're just, the Taiwanese are very smart people. I mean, they're very educated people, and they're very Japanese in their behavior, because they were colonized for 50 years, which is a good thing, because the Japanese are kind, generous, helpful, erudite, educated, cultivated. Japan, other than the Meiji Restoration, Industrial Revolution, and imperial expansion into China and the rest of Asia, but I would not mind my kids going to a Japanese school. But anyway, Taiwan is another, I don't want to say country because it's not a country, but it's another, political entity that the United States is just using and abusing, just like the Philippines, just like South Korea. The United States doesn't care about the Taiwanese. The United States will not bat an eyelash if 10 million Taiwanese die in a conflict, just like Ukraine. They will push the Taiwanese to defend Western empire and to defend America's interests, and to try to defeat China. They don't care about the Taiwanese people, the Americans. They're just cannon fodder. They have no respect or interest in them at all. So the Taiwanese, I read these polls, 40 something percent want to maintain the status quo, which is like neither independent nor reunification. 20 something percent want, to be independent, and actually only about, I think about 5% want to today to reunite with the mainland. But they're smart people. The Filipinos are smart people. The South Koreans are smart people. But they are just as brainwashed as the people in the United States are, and here in Europe. That's the sad situation. They don't know reality.
Jeff, there are two parties in Taiwan. One of them is in favor of the United States. The other one is in favor of joining and improving the relationship between Taiwan and China, mainland China. And in your opinion, how popular is the party who's in favor of China? And is that possible that they come to power?
Well, they were in power. The KMT was in power before the DPP, got into power. And then they came back for one term, and then the DPP came back. That's the KMT. Then there's the New People's Party. They just had elections. What was it, 18 months ago? The way that their proportional representation works, by voting district. Their White House, I think it's called the Blue House, is still occupied by the DPP. However, the pro-Chinese candidates for the legislature are actually in control of the legislature. So you have a hung legislature where you've got the DPP, the separatists who are controlling the executive, and then you've got the pro-China reunification party who has the majority in the legislature. So you see these, you see these incredible videos on TikTok where the party that wants to work with China is trying to pass laws to take back what the DP, all the damage that the DPP has done over the last years. And they've literally had brawls. I mean, like fisticuff law, brawls. And then the DPP members of the legislature, come in with these huge balloons, and they're bouncing balloons, in the legislature to stop, to stop the vote and all that. So they exist. I mean, the KMT, and the New People's Party together, actually have a majority in the legislature. But if in France the national rally doesn't get a majority in the legislature, it'll be Macron, as the president, who is a neocon, neoliberal, supposedly liberal president, but he would be going to, he would have to deal with a right wing legislature here in France, and it's just, nothing's going to happen. It's just the whole, everything just kind of shuts down. And so that's what's going on in Taiwan right now. The Chinese pro-mainland parties are trying to pass legislation. The DPP separatists are doing everything they can to stop it. And even if they were to pass a law, I am sure that the president would veto them in any case.
Yeah, and when it comes to these three countries that are so important within BRICS, China, India, and Russia, and we know that recently the United States was trying to separate India from China and Russia, and at the same time we're hearing that Modi is going to be, after his re-election, he's going to be in Russia and talking with Putin. That shows how important Russia is for India. And how do you see the role of Russia in bringing China and India together?
Well, one of the most brilliant things that happened was, of course, to get India to join the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. And then to get Pakistan to join at the same time, which is India's, historical post-war, post-colonial enemy. And I think that is a huge factor to keep things from getting out of control between India and China. There continues to be border skirmishes between India and Tibet, and up in the Jammu Kashmir area, which I told you is, with Pakistan as a geopolitical box of dynamite that the British left the world, knowing that it would be a running sore for these three countries. They continue to sporadically have these border disputes. China blames India. India blames China. Just knowing the Chinese and just knowing how nationalistic that the Indians are, the Hindus are, and the fact that, remember, it's not just China, but you've got Muslim Pakistan right there. You got Pakistan, China, and then you've got India down below to the south coming up, and the fact that the military is heavily Hindu, and the Hindus are extremely nationalistic. Almost foaming at the mouth, nationalistic. They treat their Muslims in India like dirt. And so I personally think it's probably the Indians who are causing most of these border disputes. And of course, China has to respond. I mean, they can't just let India just you know drive jeeps and armored personnel carriers and beyond the line of control. So the Chinese respond. Then Modi and Xi get on the telephone and smooth things over, or the generals, the Indian the Minister of Defense and the Chinese Minister of Defense will smooth, oh, everything's okay. But as I said in the last show, I don't see that ever being resolved, because the Indians again believe that they have to have all of the Pakistani land and all of the Chinese land, plus all of the Indian land, to complete the Indian goddess, because the shape of India, with her two arms outstretched and her lovely body coming down to the tip, where Sri Lanka is, she has to have her entire head on the map of India, or it will bring disaster to India. And so I blame India on this. The Chinese have said publicly, let's sit down and have talks. There are two huge chunks of land away from Jammu and Kashmir on the Tibetan border. The Chinese are saying, let's at least solve these two. They're both about the same land mass. They could just, one could take one and one could take the other. I think the Chinese would do that. But the Indians are very nationalistic and very hot-headed, and what makes it worse, it's religious based. It's the Hindu religion that's driving them. And it, I mean, so it's so it's so it's not rational. It's just not rational. They're just they that's what they believe. And so that's right now, it's nothing's really going on. China still has their economic corridor coming down through Pakistan that has transformed Pakistan, with roads and trains and going down to the Gwadar port, in the Indian Ocean. But I tell you how stupid it is, Nima. I just learned that there are no direct flights between India and China. Can you believe that? No direct flights between India and China. And who is stopping it? India. So this is how unreasonable they can be. I mean, the two most populous countries in the world, common border, lots to offer each other in terms of commerce and trade, and there's no direct flights between the two countries, and India will not budge off of that. So it's not a great situation for BRICS. It's not a great situation for the SCO, the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. But as long as it stays within this, with this, and this just kind of, niggling, confrontation on the line of control in Jammu Kashmir. There's no civil war going on. There's no, invasions going on. It's just low grade irritation. It's not stopping China from doing what it wants to do. It's not stopping India from doing what it wants to do. And I'm sure Russia is in the background. They don't have to tell anything to China. They know the Chinese know it, but I'm sure Russia is probably, Lavrov, their foreign minister, and Putin are reminding them of the importance of BRICS, reminding them of the importance of the SCO. India's not a member of the Belt and Road Initiative. They're so envious of China. They're not even a member of the Belt and Road Initiative. So India's a India is an enigma in Asian politics and geopolitics.
In your opinion, right now, with the current face of the conflict in Ukraine, which is so important, and many people would argue that the main goal of this conflict in Ukraine was China, not Russia, because they wanted to bring down Russia and then go after China.
It's
Yeah.
true.
And we've learned that recently new polls in Europe shows that most Europeans are against the conflict in Ukraine and they want to have a peaceful settlement. How do you see the current situation of the European Union vis-a-vis the conflict in Ukraine? Do you think that they would move towards some sort of negotiations, or are they gonna continue that policy of continuation of the war in Ukraine?
Emil, first off, after World War II, when the Western elites were fearful that communism would be popular in Europe, the same thing happened in the United States, back in the 20s and 30s. But they were so worried about the communism becoming that the people would start demanding communism or socialism, at least on more than they got, more than the socialism that they got, because they actually got a lot of socialism after World War II because the elites were so afraid that the people would want to adopt communism. So back then, polls mattered, demonstrations mattered. When people demonstrated, the leaders actually paid attention, not because they cared about their people, but because they cared about their jobs. They cared about staying in power. It was extremely cynical. Well, that lasted for about 30 years. It's what the French call the Golden 30. The Golden 30 years from 1945 until 1975, when the people in Europe were listened to. And that and Europe was incredibly socialist. They had, in order to stay in power, they had to give the they had to offer a lot of socialism in Europe to keep communism at bay. That's it, basically. They bought off the European people to with a lot of socialism, and a lot to keep communism, Soviet style communism, at bay. However, starting in the 1980s, just like in the United States, polls used to matter too after the war. They used to, oh my gosh, look, the people are against this. Oh, the people want that. But starting in the 80s, with the neoliberals and the neocons taking over in the United States, and then Margaret Thatcher taking over in England, and the whole tide, the media began to support neoconservative policies, and as you can just see, the chaos in the West right now, in the United States, in Canada, in the UK, in Europe, et cetera, the total chaos. They don't care about those polls anymore. They don't even care what the people think or do. They go out and protest and protest and protest, and nothing happens. They don't even listen to them. And so that's the polls are meaningless. Europe is a satrap. It is a complete and total vassal of Washington and of NATO, which is based in Brussels. So they're right there, to keep their hand, to keep their boot on Europe. The elites have, what a lot of people don't understand is, after 1945, the United States invested billions and billions of dollars over decades and decades and decades to cultivate pro-American bureaucrats, to cultivate pro-American leaders, to cultivate pro-American business people. You know, the Atlantic Bridge, there was the Atlantic Bridge program, you know, so the United States would send, you know, lots of Europeans to the United States for on junkets, you know, to get brainwashed, and also to get blackmailed, to get bribed, to get extorted, and et cetera. So over the last 80 years, the halls of European power have become infested like termites or like woodworms with pro-American, pro-Atlanticist, you know, pro-NATO politicians, bureaucrats, local representatives. I mean, it's down, way down, you know. It's not just the president and the prime minister, but it's all the legislatures. The European Parliament is totally beholden. The European Commission, Ursula von der Leyen, is just a, you know, she might as well wear a NATO cap and salute Uncle Sam. So that's the problem. The leaders don't care about their people. They don't care about what's going on. They don't care about the fact that, you know, we're cutting back on food. We're cutting, you know, we know people here in France who had no heat this winter. They couldn't afford it. They lived with no heat all winter, and it gets cold here. 30% of the British had to turn off their heat this winter. It's just as bad in the United States, if not worse. So the people are suffering. We've got inflation. We've got violence. There's just murders and rapes and stabbings nonstop on the television. There's drugs and gang fighting in the neighborhoods outside of the big cities like Paris and Marseille. You know, this France is now is a bit like Trenton, New Jersey, or Compton, Los Angeles. You know, it's become a scary place. There's a lot of crime here now. People can't afford, you know, people can't afford to you know, to put, you know, gas in their car. It's 82% of the French cannot save 1 euro at the end of the month. 25% are skipping meals. It's, you know, 45% can no longer even afford to go on a vacation. So they don't care. So NATO's in charge. The European bank, the bank of the City of London is in charge. You know, the banks, the Rothschilds and the Morgans and all the trillionaire bankers are in charge with NATO. And they are going to, business is good. Lots of weapons are being sold. They're printing, they're just photocopying money, like they're just photocopying euros and US dollars like a Xerox machine. And as long as they can keep doing that, they're going to keep. Well, just yesterday I saw on French TV, I was just saying, the United States gave the Ukraine another $2.3 billion in weapons. You know, it's not going to stop. Because business is good, there's a lot of racism against Slavic people since 1054 with the Great Schism. They have never forgiven the Orthodox Church for separating from the Roman Catholic Church. There's a lot of racism against Slavic people, and so they're not going to stop. It doesn't matter what anybody says until they just. Until they run, until the printing presses stop, or Russia takes over the entire territory of Ukraine so that they have no place to ship arms. And then if they do attack Ukraine, which would now be Russia, then it would be Poland that would have to answer, or Romania or Slovakia. And Brussels would have to answer for, you know, well, why, you know, why are we bombing what is now Russia? So don't, yeah, it's terrible. It's awful. But you know what? You know what, Nima? I was at a family at a family dinner or a lunch about a month ago in Paris to celebrate my daughter's master's graduation ceremony that we had gone to. She had just graduated from university here, and it was incredible. It was just like Putin, 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 Putin. The people are just brainwashed. It's awful, but it's the big lie propaganda machine. You turn on the TV, you open up a magazine, you listen to the radio, you open up a newspaper, and what do you see? Putin, 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 Putin. So the Europeans are smart people, but they are just as brainwashed as the Taiwanese are, as are the South Koreans, as are the Americans. That's just the way it is. They have no notion of what's really going on in the world.
Right now, with what's going on in France, we know that the first party in these new elections in France, the first party was the right wing party, and the second was the left wing party. And when you compare these two parties, what's the difference between these two in terms of the conflict in Ukraine, in terms of the conflict in Gaza?
Well, the left wing, which is headed by Jean-Luc Mélenchon, is the big issue here is immigration. And the left wing wants to open the floodgates and let in as many immigrants as they possibly can. It's a cynical ploy because during the administration of François Mitterrand in 1981, in fact, all through the 80s, they passed a law that foreigners in France could vote. So all you need in France is a resident permit. Well, in France, if someone from the Central African Republic or if someone from Iraq gets here with all these boats, you know, going across the Mediterranean and all the land bridge through Turkey, and you know they're just coming in by the millions. If you can get in France and for 3 months and stay here for 3 months, you get a resident permit. And you get all the benefits, social medicine, you know, housing, minimum salary, 1,500 euros a month. No wonder they want to come here. So and they didn't used to be this way. I mean, the left used to be very anti-immigration because they took away jobs, and the left was for the working class people, you know, the socialists and all that. Well, now they're completely co-opted by big business. They're co-opted by the City of London and Wall Street and NATO. So the left wants a lot of foreign voters, and those foreign voters are going to likely be Muslim because they're coming from the northern part of Africa and the Middle East, West Asia, who are predominantly Muslim, and so they're courting the Muslim vote. It's totally cynical, and the opposite is the National Rally, which is the right wing. They are against immigration. They are the right wing. The right wing will, kind of like Trump, it's really like Trump. I mean, Marine Le Pen, the leader of the National Rally, has said on numerous occasions, you know, I would, as you know, as president of France, I would look forward to sitting down with Vladimir Putin and talking business. That they are much more business oriented, helping the small business people. In fact, the right is talking much more about the issues of inflation, immigration, crime, drugs, taxes, much, much more than the left is. The left, if a young kid, gets in a violent situation with a policeman, and the policeman shoots the kid in self-defense, the left just rises up in indignant anger and persecutes the policeman, and the policeman is jailed and the kid goes free. So that's what the left is supporting, which is why I'm not voting for the left, even though I'm a member of the French Communist Party. I can't stand the left. They are hideous. They are awful. And Mélenchon and Hollande and all these supposed left-wing leaders, they're all multimillionaires. They've all got millions of dollars and houses, and they're just the biggest hypocrites. So I'm voting for the rally. As I voted Sunday for the national rally, because at least they're talking about the issues. We cannot keep having millions of undocumented foreigners flooding into this country. It's destroying the fabric of society. Iran would not want 10 million Europeans flooding into Iran. China would not want 10 million Europeans flooding into China. And that's what's happening in the United States with Biden, and that's what's happening here with in Europe. So the right is at least talking about the issues. The problem is that Nima, you would be absolutely stunned at the propaganda here against the national rally, against the right. It is completely rabid. It's completely deranged. All the media are just coming out and calling 40%. 40% of the French people voted for the RN in the first round. No, I'm sorry, in the European, well, also in the European Parliament elections. And the Minister of Interior actually came out and called them Nazis. So Macron, they're all literally frightened to death that the right could win. It's just like they were frightened to death that Trump can win, because Trump will bring troops home and lessen tensions overseas and talk with Putin and talk with Xi, and as odious as he is, he talked to Kim in North Korea, trying to mend bridges there, and so that the right here and Trump are very similar, although the right here is not demagogues like Trump, but they have that same idea. Let's sit down and talk with Putin. Let's sit down and talk with Xi. I think that the right would do a lot, would get at least France to participate much, much less in Ukraine. They're much more anti-war than the left. Palestine is a real problem here because the Jewish lobby owns this country, literally owns this country, maybe even more so than in the United States with AIPAC. Here it's called the CRIF, and it's curious, they leave the J out. They leave the J out, which for Jewish, but its lobby is called CRIF, CRIF, but it should be CRIJF, but they leave out the J. But they totally dominate the country here. It is against the law to criticize Zionism. It is against the law to question the Holocaust. And there is a law on the books that has not been passed yet that it's against the law to even criticize Israel. So that is a real problem here. Of course, the left, to curry favor with the Muslim population, which is 10% here right now. Oh, Palestine, Palestine, Palestine. but it's about as sincere as a bad joke. They don't care about the Palestinians. They're just trying to curry votes from the 10% of the population that's Muslim. And idealistic, bourgeois left wingers in Paris, who want to stand, who want to make a stand against, for something, to support the Palestinians. But I mean, I'm a member of the I'm a member of the French Palestinian solidarity group here in Cherbourg, where I live. And they're sincere people. They really, they're really trying hard, to help the Palestinians. But the left doesn't care about them, but they curry their favor. And the right is has there's actually a lot of Muslims who are going to vote for the right wing, because they are fed up with the violence and the chaos and the drugs and the criminality and the complete just dysfunction of the governments.